Hello, you silly sausages. Welcome to this episode of the ITV STV Guinness Six Nations podcast with myself, Tom Shanklin.
And what? Die Flats.
Well,
don't start.
I am going to start. There is a wonderful Instagram account that's been started up. It's called Die Flats Fans. I can't even say it.
Flans.
It's a mouthful.
Flans.
Die Flats Fans. And it's just incredible. I mean, you're a very avid poster of pictures on Instagram, on Twitter. And whoever it is, I don't know, man or woman, I've scrolled through and found some quality photos of you, Flats, and they just leave unbelievable quotes from David Brent and one from Chris Finch as well. Make sure you follow Die Flats Fans. It's incredible. I love it.
You don't need to follow them.
It's a sign of disrespect, I think. They don't respect you. They don't respect your work. I'd be a little bit annoyed if it was me. I see the funny side of it. As you're trying to, but
I'm faking it a bit. The one I did like was me presenting the Power Woman Awards at the Rosewood last year. They put a picture up of that and it said something like, "How can I hate women? My mum's one."
Did it really?
I thought that actually made me laugh.
Oh.
That's good.
What, the photo I sent to him?
Say, oh, you this. Did? Right, listeners. Shanks has got in touch with this guy. He's on his phone sending him pictures, giving them captions. It is you. You chop.
That's the only one I've done.
I
was just brilliant. The quote came to mind. Funny, very funny.
Because Shanks basically started loving this account. And so I don't know if I told you this, but I secretly got in touch with the guy because I worked out who it was. It's the only person that's liked any of their photos because no one follows them yet. So I just sent this guy a message and said, "Look, Shanks, I think it's odd, but good on you. Why are you doing it out of interest?" And then Shanks thinks you're great. So how about we do a surprise, surprise Cilla Black job and get you on the pod after the Six Nations or whatever? It turns out Shanks is already in touch with them, feeding them content.
I met the guy in Cardiff Station, mate. I had a photo with him. He just came up to me and said, I'm the guy that created Die Flats Fans. And I said, "Oh, amazing." And he was a bit sort of nervous. He was sort of saying, you know, "Does he like it? You know, is it too much? Do you think I should keep going?" I went, "Doesn't matter what he likes, mate. I love it."
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with
it. I love the quotes, mate. That's all. I love the quotes. And
oh, God.
Well, we've had a busy week, haven't we?
God, don't ask. Don't.
Start off on Wednesday, Flatiron Square with Guinness. And we were going to have Danny Cipriani. He was meant to be the headline guest, but obviously after the incident with Caroline Flack, you know, very, very close to her. Huge friendship they had. And I don't know if you've all seen his video he's posted recently, talking about his own mental health. And, you know, there was no way he could turn up. And nor did we want him there. You know, we wanted him to, you know, we didn't want to force him to come at all. It's such a horrible time for him. So anyway, we had Phil Vickery and Wayne Barnes and got some great tips on how to cook a sourdough with Phil Vickery. I don't know if any of you follow him on Instagram. Every day there is a loaf of sourdough, sometimes with raisins, coming out of the oven. Or he's just slicing it with a knife.
Phil's mad.
There is a slight bit of madness to Vicks.
He's mad in a lovely, lovely way. See,
I loved it when he grabbed you and he started to do a bit of a scrummaging session with you. No, he was trying to show a neck roll, wasn't he?
Yeah, do a neck roll in me.
And it got a bit alpha.
Yeah.
I'm going with you, mate.
We ended up in A&E via prison.
He's lost a lot of weight. You're still very muscular. I'm backing you all away.
My favourite Phil Vickery memory, and there are lots, favourite broadcastable one is when we played against Argentina in 2002, and it's a game we weren't meant to win, and they rested most of the big dogs, but they made Vicks come as captain, and there's no way we were going to win that game, and we won it, and I played all right, and that ended up being it for me. But he rang me after the tour, a couple of days after the tour, and he just said, "I'm just driving along, mate, and I'm feeling really chuffed for you, not as captain, not as any of this, a big England player, anything like that." He said, "I'm just as old Phil. I'm just really happy for old Dave. Well done, boy. Sleep well." I was like, what a lovely little message. And he just, "As you sleep well, boy." And I said, what a great bloke. If you've got an event where you want someone to come and chat about anything, yeah, sport or rugby, fine, but kind of anything, consider Vicks because he's just brilliant.
And he'll also bring a sourdough starter with him.
He's opening a restaurant.
Good. Well, he should do.
I'm going.
He should do.
And Wayne Barnes, he's a weirdo.
You know, Vicks is the right shape and size to open a restaurant. Never trust a skinny chef.
No. But you agree that Barnes is a weirdo.
Oh, mate, every time I look at Wayne Barnes, I realise to myself that is why I shave my head.
Yeah. That's why I don't wear combat trousers with walking shoes.
Well, we spent a lot of time with him this week. We were with him today. Thank you to the Green Room and Hospitality Finder for having Flats, Shanks, and obviously Wayne Barnes today. Johnny Gould hosted it. Great fun today. It's not often I get to go to a game where I can just enjoy it. I can be impartial, you know, where I'm not emotionally attached to the game. But it's nice because you and Barnes are obviously very heavily biased towards England. Ireland. And I can just give an unbiased opinion.
I've never known you give an unbiased opinion, but very neutral. I'm. Some people say to me, a guy said to me today, Flats, you're a really chilled and relaxed guy, and we love you and respect you for everything you do. And you're a role model to a lot of us, and you should have got at least 50 England caps because you're the best loser of your generation. But sometimes you're a bit too neutral.
Mm.
You want a bit more emotion from you, a bit too neutral. And I said, sorry, that's my job.
Can you stop picking Ben Curry in every single position for England?
He said it. He said it as criticism. I took it as a compliment.
But thank you to Mike. Thank you to Sue. Thank you to everyone at Hospitality Finder for having us. It was
really
a very good day. Do you remember Owen? There was an Irish guy there called Owen today, and he wasn't very happy. Barnsley told this on stage. He wasn't very happy that I was part of the Irish contingent. If you're going to hear an alarm going off, it's because we're sat in a car park and
someone's left their dog in the car. They have.
Have they really?
Yeah, I saw a little dog in there.
Oh, I love him.
Nah, he's all right.
But yeah, there was Owen, an Irish guy. He wasn't too happy that I was the Irish representative there today. Well, I wasn't the Irish representative there today. I was with you.
Well, Tyke Furlong came in as well.
Yeah, big unit. Spoke very well, didn't he?
I've seen him do interviews and all that sort of stuff and the odd thing on social media. This is not about personalities. It's about objective analysis. I think I really would really like him and would like to be friends with him. So I'm hoping he likes barbecues and I can strike up a friendship and say, look, mate, I can get you a deal on this grill you don't need. Tell you what, I'll bring it over myself and stay for the month. Let's be friends. Apparently at under 20s, they asked him what his nickname was at under 20s and he said the jukebox. And they said, why is that? He said, because the big hits just keep coming. I love that.
That's a good one.
That's so good.
That is a good one. But anyway, this Owen, you know, he wasn't very happy. Barnsley called him out on stage and said he reckons he could do a better job as well. We got him to stand up and he couldn't do a better job.
No.
So sat back down quickly.
We got into him, but we had fun, didn't we?
Yeah.
You swear too much, but I was okay.
It was also good. We popped downstairs and saw a lot of the other guys. They're all floating around, weren't they?
Floaters everywhere, weren't there?
Always good to see Jiffy, isn't it? Jonathan Davis.
I just love his company.
I think he's 62 years old now.
Really?
Yeah, maybe even more. He might be 65, but still got the energy of
a 61-year-old.
Of a 40-year-old. love seeing him. But they're all there, weren't they? So it was a really good day.
Peter Stringer was there?
Looks a little bit like me. Not as cut, not as ripped.
He's
let himself go in a way, and I feel bad for people like that because
I do.
You know, they were always in such peak physical condition, but when they retire, they start to look a little bit like that, like a soup sandwich.
It's not about, you know, we've got kids, haven't we, you and I? It's not about what you look like, but he had an awful nick now, isn't he? Looked awful, didn't he? His face looks similar, but he's really, really loose around the middle now, isn't he?
It's sort of two ways rugby players go, isn't it? Some, you know, like us, continue to train, work hard in the gym.
We basically look the same.
Yeah.
As when we were at elite.
Whilst others do nothing, eat a lot, eat the wrong food. They eat dirty, train clean, whilst we're complete opposite.
Yeah, we eat clean and train dirty.
You got it. Mm. You got it. You're still with me.
But Tyke Furlong's one of my favourites, boy.
Yeah.
I was pretty relaxed today. I didn't give that away too much. But he looked at you and you gave you that British Lions look. He walked off and Shank said to me, did you see that, boy?
I did, didn't I?
He looked at me and he said, that's a look of lions.
We've been there.
And he looked at me and thought, you could lift heavy things off the floor and nothing else. I said, correct. Nice to meet you.
I did say it, didn't I?
You did, yeah. It's like Geach, you know, 97 on the Living with Lions.
Yes,
it'll be a look. It'll just be a look.
You'll pass each other in a couple of years' time, 10 years' time, and you'll have that look, won't you? We've been there.
I did a British Lions event once, and I wasn't a British Lion. I'm still not. And who was it? It was there. It was like, I think it was Lewis Moody, actually. I was talking about a Lions tour, and I just put myself in it, and I just decided to make out for the whole day that I was a Lion as well, and thought, no one will see if someone pulls me up. Moodos started saying, oh, you remember that big dinner we had in Christchurch or Dunedin? I was like, yeah, I know. God, it got loose, didn't it? He was like, oh, massively, wasn't it? And Moodos was there and he didn't even know I wasn't there.
Do you know, there comes a point when you retire where you can literally say anything and people just take your word for it.
Cool, them was the days. Right, Tommy, coming up, we're going to hear from Owen Farrell, Vanya Puvec, Sean Edwards, trying to say it in a French accent, Sean Edward, Stuart Hogg. Pick our team of the round and tell a couple more of the gags you've left for us on iTunes, guys.
So, it was Farrell versus Farrell at Twickenham with bragging rights going to the sun, not the dad, as England prevailed 24-12. David and I were there, as you know, and we'll tell you what we reckon after we've heard from Faz Jr. talking about England to Big Bafes.
Oh, many congratulations. That was some statement from England today.
I think we know what we're capable of, and obviously we played in two games where one we probably didn't show the best of ourselves, and second was pretty bad conditions, so we couldn't wait to get out here today, especially against a proper opponent like Ireland.
There's been a little bit of scratching of heads sometimes with Eddie Jones's selection, with Tom Curry at number eight, Jonathan Joseph now on the wing today. He seemed confident when I spoke to him before the game about that. The players have responded to pressure that's being put on them, unusual pressure.
Oh, it's pressure from everybody else, it's not us. We're unbelievably happy with how it's going in-house. We feel like we're pushing forward, we feel like we're getting better, and we couldn't wait to play this today. I think you saw that from the way that we started the game. That's nothing to do with outside pressure, that's nothing to do with anybody saying anything on the outside. That's to do with us and how we're preparing. We're giving ourselves lots of confidence to rip in come kick-off.
You've got a two-week break now, an opportunity to rest bones, to rest the spirit a little bit. You had that in the build-up to the game. How valuable are these downtimes for you after such an intensive game?
Oh, it's another opportunity. We'll make sure we enjoy this win first. This is a big result for us, and it's brilliant to be back at home playing in front of this crowd. But we'll celebrate that, and then we'll get on to the next opportunity. It's exciting times. We're just over halfway through now, and we're in a good place. We're still building.
Did you know Martin Bayfield, when he used to present on ITV, I think, the world's strongest man around New Year, you know, best television programme of the year, apart from SAS Who Dares Wins, loads of these strongest men in the world would only be interviewed by him sitting down. They wouldn't be interviewed by him standing up because he was taller than them and they didn't like it.
Really?
Really.
Yeah, but he might be taller than them, but there's no chance he's as thick as them, as in thick set.
Are you saying all strong men are thick?
Or muscle bat, or muscle.
Yeah, but they didn't like looking up at people because they're meant to be the biggest in the world, and Bafes is 6'10", and he said lots of them didn't like it.
Interesting fact. I'm sure you all know that Bafes was a stunt double. Well, not even a stunt double, he was a body double for Hagrid in all of the Harry Potter films. So when you see Hagrid walking away or next to Harry.
It's Aaron Martin, isn't it?
I've
never seen Harry Potter.
That is Bafes.
Faz is in good spirits, wasn't he? Pleased that he and the lads could right the wrongs of Paris against what's a very good Ireland side. Manny went well, didn't he? Made
yeah,
a difference.
He did. Huge. And you always, if you're an England fan, you're probably a little bit worried about how fit Manu is. You know, can he come straight back into the game? And I suppose it's a lot easier for someone like Manu to come into the game where your strengths are being physical, your strengths are being aggressive, getting over the game line, whilst someone who relies more heavily on deft touches, passes, you know, someone like George Ford, it's probably a lot easier for Manu to come straight back into that fold because of the way he plays. But yeah, look, he was massive in attack, massive in defence. As a player, as a former centre, I would have hated to come up against someone like Manu because, you know, on his day, he's got the complete package. He's got everything, isn't he? You know, he's not only a strike runner, he can create space for others. Offloading game, the lot.
See his hit on stander.
Yeah.
Butcher.
Huge, huge. You know, I think one of the hardest things to do now, and we have to be so brave, is off kickoffs. Because the fly halves now can kick the ball so high and put it just on the 22, whoever's catching that ball has got a player on him straight away.
Getting Jimmy nailed, aren't they?
Yeah. It's a tough thing. Players do it now, but you've got to be brave to do it. But yeah, look, Manu was awesome.
Johnny Sexton, very recently, World Player of the Year. Didn't have a good day, did he?
That's fair to say, Flats. Now, he failed to gather the first kick through. It's a difficult bounce, but you've really got to be tidying that up. I think also Jordan Lahm was probably a little bit too far on his right-hand side. Needs to probably be a little bit more directly behind that ruck. But as a 15, you know, you gamble sometimes as to which way the ball's going to go to give yourself a little bit more chance, a little bit more time. I thought it was a very good kick through by Ben Youngs. Everyone in England knew what was coming. A great follow-up as well.
Very good, that.
By George Ford. But Ireland slightly got caught out there. But 9 times out of 10, though, or not 9 times, maybe 7 times out of 10 flats, you know, Johnny Sexton's going to regather that ball,
yeah,
dot it down, drop out 22.
That's just a horrible bounce, but the backfield defence, it seemed like England were targeting, it's either just Jordan Lahm or when it get a bit deeper into the Irish 22, Lahm and Murray and that sort of defensive back, almost sweeper axis there. And it felt like there was a lot of space England exposed. Both the tries exposed a lot of space.
Well,
those two tries.
The England dead ball area is quite big. Not as big as Murrayfield, which is just gigantic. But the second try, Elliot Daly, now the kick was just perfect, right? If that kick doesn't bounce on the grass, it's going to be caught. It had to bounce on the grass for Elliot Davies to be able to get on it. You know, if that kick's a little bit shorter, it's caught, you know, it's dropout 22. But because the kick was so perfect and it manages to touch the ground, it bounces awkwardly and it's a great follow-up. So you're not really going to have a sweeper there, you know, on your own line. You don't have a sweeper. You know, you've got one defensive line and you've just got to rely on people reacting quick enough. And now, look, Ireland did react, but as I said, because the kick was so good, it just bounced and allowed Daly to get there. Finish was exceptional as well. One-handed to be able to do that, the control to do that as well. But then Ireland were rocked. Ireland was shaken. You know, Johnny Sexton scuffs one off the tee, does it again then in the second half. He wasn't great at goal kicking, and that's just a fact. He's a quality player, but not probably his best game he's had. Tough day at the office for him, but look, he's that good. He's that experienced that he'll come back from this absolutely no problem.
Yeah, once or twice he had to deal with Manu coming on a short line, and it's like, well, he slowed him down once, and the next time it didn't even really slow him down, straight through him, and it was kind of, that's, in fairness, that's a tough ask. Johnny Sexton physically is a very brave player, hence all the knocks he's had over the years. But it happens to every top player. That wasn't his day.
I thought England mixed their defence really well. Yeah. They didn't blitz at all off scrum. There's no real line speed off scrum. They just sort of held off Ireland. They let Ireland do whatever moves they wanted to do and then sort of pushed them to the touchline. You know, just gave themselves a little bit more time and said, right, yeah, you know, we'll let you have a few yards, but you've got to get it out wide. They did. And Ireland never really looked like threatening that England defensive line. Then other times then, in phase play, they blitzed really hard. You had Johnny Sexton trying to throw the ball over the top, and that's exactly what you want when you're blitzing. You want, you fly half to try and gamble, try and throw that ball over the top. And because you throw passes like that, ball's in the air for a long time, then they get picked off. And we nearly saw that a couple of times. I thought it was really sensible and clever defence by England. They mixed it well. And that just keeps the Irish attack thinking, you know, thinking, right, are they blitzing now? Are they drifting? Because you've got different moves for different defences. But it was the power game, though, Flats, that really impressed me for England.
What did you make of Jonathan Joseph on the wing?
Really good, mate.
Didn't he?
I thought he had a brilliant game, considering that he hardly ever plays on the wing. And you're thinking, right, when that England team is picked, you know, there's plenty of class wingers in the Gallagher to pick from. They picked Jonathan Joseph, and in attack, I thought he was one of England's best. You know, didn't make any mistakes, really. He didn't look out of position defensively as well, but he had one run, which was just incredible footwork. And you're sort of seeing, yeah, actually, that is a great call by Eddie Jones to keep him in, because the go forward he gives you and the instinctive running off phase play, there's not many better in that team.
Yeah, that was a good little run, that as well. Marrow was pulling off CJ Stander's shirt on the floor,
yeah,
wasn't it?
I saw it. What about Ellis Genge coming on, the power coming off the bench? You mentioned about the decision to pick Courtney Laws at six, it paid off.
Courtney was good. Courtney was really, really good. And that's the thing with, you know, Courtney's not playing in the back row if Curry's at six, obviously, so the whole thing, should they pick a number eight, it worked out for them today, because Curry's never going to have a bad game. Against France, there were a couple of number eight specific errors at the back of the scrum, but as a rugby player, he is very unlikely to have a bad game in the next 5 years, a properly bad game. He's just too good. He's just too efficient at what he does, and he's a great, really good all-round player, isn't he? But Courtney was fantastic today, really, really strong. Genge off the bench, I mean, he's just so aggressive, just leering and snarling the whole time. And all that posturing stuff, that means nothing if you don't back it up.
Yeah.
Then he smacks into a scrum against Andrew Porter, who is really big, really strong, and he absolutely tuned him up and marched through him, and it was brutal. And he gets up with a look of what on his face, loving it. And Manu's running in, screaming and laughing, hands in the air like they've won the game. It's, you know, Sir Clive said on ITV afterwards that he's not necessarily convinced about the whole power finishing, the power finisher type thing, but he reckons England should start with Genge in a couple of weeks against Wales. The thing is, Mako comes back. Remove Mako from it. We don't know when he's coming back.
Okay.
And I'm sure he will be back by then, but what if he's not? It's so hard to drop Joe Marler because Joe just does everything so well. There is a sense that at some point you're going to have to start Genge a few times, because how good does he need to be off the bench in order to get a start? But then to have that conversation, it's easy to say you've got to pick someone, but then you've actually got to tell Joe Marler he's not playing. And while I expect Joe would take that like a pro, I'm not sure it's justified. I also think if you've got those two and you've got to play one for 50 or 55 and you've got to play one off the bench, you'd probably rather bring Genge off the bench than Marler, because he's more explosive. the combination probably works. But if you're going to start Genge, Italy's a good game to start him in. But so's Wales, because the Welsh scrum in terms of penalty count went quite nicely against France. But actually, it's not a major strength of their game. They don't have, I say this respectfully, they don't have two brutish tight heads. They just don't. They're getting there, but they're not brutish just yet.
In terms of, say, Joe Marler and Ellis Genge, probably quite difficult to choose, as you said, between them. You choose whoever's going to make the biggest impact off the bench, really. You know, and that is Genge. You know, that's the reason why, I would say. But look, Ireland had, you know, overall possession of around 61%. Just couldn't
around 61%. Exactly.
Well, you go on different. You go on different apps. You go on different websites. They give you a different percentage. So I'm averaging this now.
He's gone 14 websites and he's divided it by 14.
But look, Ireland came back into it. Thought Henshaw's finish was brilliant, real power to get through two tackles, get the ball over the line. And you just think, this is, Ireland need to score again in that situation. Yeah. They need to come back again, but they couldn't. But do you look at that game, Flats? Because, you know, it's like moving weekend, this is, in golf. You know, you start to see where the teams are going to finish. Do you look at that and think, right, England really needed a bonus point there because they lost against France, because Ireland have got France last game up. Ireland can win that game. There's no doubt about that.
Yep.
And the pressure, all the pressure will be on France. We could come down to three teams having all lost one game. And then it's going to come down to bonus points. So is that a game where England just should have gone for it and thrown everything, again, a bonus point? Or do you think they're just happy with a win?
I think they would have tried to as hard as they possibly could to get one. I think they will be happy to have won, but absolutely there will be lads in that changing room gutted they didn't get a bonus point, because it could end up being crucial. And it means that really you have to be thinking bonus point win against Wales at home, and you don't really want to be thinking that, but it will enter some people's minds on the day. I think they go in as favourites against Wales after that. Well, they certainly do. And Italy, respectfully, they should smack with a bonus point, really. So it's fascinating, isn't it? It's advantage France, of course it is. I'm still waiting for France to implode.
They nearly did.
But we'll talk about that in a minute. Times. I think they actually did a France at the weekend. They actually did it. They just didn't get pinged for it.
Yeah.
So they kind of got away with doing a France. They sort of found a way to concede points at the wrong time toward the end of that game, and they got away with it. But we'll talk about that in a sec. But it makes it a brilliant Six Nations. I mean, England having thumped Ireland today makes it really, really interesting. And France having beaten Wales, it's great. There are big teams losing.
Yeah.
So it's what we want.
It's exactly what we want. It's a big one in a couple of weeks. Well, from our point of view anyway, England versus Wales at Twickenham. It's a match you can see live and exclusive on ITV. Kick-off at 4:45. And also, do check out Rising Suns on the ITV Hub. It's a documentary about England's World Cup exploits in Japan. I don't want to spoil it for you, but they don't win, okay?
What a belter in Cardiff, Shanko. What a test match. It just had, if it didn't have everything, it very nearly had everything. With France probably just about deserving to turn your boys over 27-23, despite the odd controversial moment. We'll get your thoughts on the game in two shakes of a Welsh lamb's tail after we've heard from Vanya Pivec and Sean De Edward.
Yeah, it was a bit different yesterday, really, and when we came for the captain's run, I actually did step one step the wrong way. Like, I honestly did do that, yeah. Everyone's telling me you can't go in the wrong dressing room, and I nearly did. But, yeah, I ended up in, you know, obviously preparing the French team, and it was a rip-roaring encounter. Could have gone out of the way, and, you know, fortunately we came on the right end of the scoreline. If we can improve our possession count and maybe turn that round, I think we can be a real threat to potentially winning the trophy. Obviously, we're 3 from 3 at the moment, but we've got one of the toughest fixtures away from home against Scotland. The toughest game last year in the Six Nations for Wales was Scotland away. It was an absolutely unbelievably tough game. So, you know, we're expecting a real battle in 2 weeks' time.
Obviously, it's disappointing that the result didn't go our way, but I thought, you know, after half-time, everything pretty much went to plan, really, in terms of the momentum shift, and got back into the game at 17-16, and I think the intercept obviously killed that momentum, but we felt that we'd done enough to come back into the game. A couple of key moments. The intercept was a big one, but also the slap down and the tackle close to the line, so well, you know, we'll have a good look at that, but certainly I thought it was at least a penalty. And again, that stops the momentum. I think also the scrum penalty, where the scrums have gone well all day, the new tight end comes on and goes straight across the scrum. So he got rewarded for that.
Come on then, let's get straight to it. Penalty try, yes or no?
Yep.
Just give me a, oh, brilliant. God, I thought we'd have to work harder for that. 100% a penalty try. Willemsen's arm hits the ball down before he's even tackled him. You know,
like he's playing basketball, fella.
Exactly. Like volleyball and the spike or the smash, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But I know it's easy to do, but if you stop that game from a high angle where the ball is knocked down, you've got Josh Adams, one of the best finishers in the Northern Hemisphere at the
top
moment.
500 anyway.
Yeah. That is a run-in for him. If that ball is allowed to get to him, it's a run-in. So what I can't work out is that the clock was stopped. All three assistant referees and referee, all two assistant referees and referee, take their time. They look at it on the big screen and they still don't give it. That is, for me, clear and obvious. Should have been a penalty try. But
you're biased. You're Welsh.
This is what happens. This is what happens in rugby. You know, it goes for you sometimes. It doesn't. That was a huge thing, but the other big thing was the intercept. You can do nothing about that.
Don't throw it.
If Nick Tompkins keeps that ball in hand for an extra 1.5 seconds, he goes past Entermac, hits his winger, and that quite possibly could be a try for Wales. That's a 14-point swing.
What we call fine margins?
It was an incredible game, mate. I was invested in it all the way through. I did co-coms for World Feed, and you know, sometimes you're in games and you forget you're actually commentating because you're so into the game. It was like that. I mean, the start was incredible. The noise was like
Wales
versus England 2013. It was like that. You know, that you had to fire the pyrotechnics and you just know you're in for a good game when the atmosphere is like that. The crowd were fantastic. And Vaca Tower, again, in the centre.
Talk to me.
Yeah, I mean, we probably didn't see loads of him in attack, but when he does get the ball, people and defenders just naturally back off a bit because you don't know what he's going to do. And that gives him a little bit more space. Then he steps. Then he's got the power to go through tackles. But defensively, he was on point, mate. You know, there's one instance where he smashes Lee Halfpenny. Dan Bigger throws a long pass out, which is just off the cuff. You can see that because it bounces, hits Lee Halfpenny. Lee Halfpenny then has got nothing on. He tries to thread the ball through, but just gets annihilated by Vaca Tower.
Yeah.
I think they win a penalty, then they kick the touch, and that's when Willemsen ends up coming around the front peel, which we know doesn't work, and then it works.
The front peel never works until it works, Tommy. It's fact.
Exactly. And Johnny McNichol misses him, gets bumped off, and they score a try. So a couple of tries came down to Wales' mistakes. But look, France won the aerial battle in the first half. Every single kick that went up somehow ended up on France's side. That was evident for Boutier's try. You've got two players there trying to shield Lee Halfpenny, and no one really covering behind. I know you're trying to block players, but at some stage you have to actually get out of the way and let your fullback have a proper run up to it as well. I mean, it was a little bit of a lucky bounce, but Wales got one in the second half, which went into Nick Tompkins' hands.
But it wasn't aerially convincing, was it?
No. But second half, you know, it was the first 20 minutes that really frightened Wales. Defensively, France off the line, incredibly fast, really aggressive in the tackle, as we expected. But it had a little bit of everything. You know, there's some real dubious decisions. There was an offload from Boutier, I think, to Vaca Tower. There was called back. France ended up scoring, but it was called back for forward. Didn't look forward first off, but when I saw the reverse angle, yeah, I think it went slightly forward. But, you know, Wales needed to do more with France's 14 men. They didn't. They should have scored at the end of that second half, but France held them out. I think it's the right decision as well. Alan Wynne-Jones took the scrum twice. The ascendancy was with Wales, and sometimes, you know, you get a feeling on the
field. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't disagree with that decision. You know, I think it was a correct decision, but unfortunately, they didn't come away with any points. You know, the ball that Gareth Davis got off that second penalty scrum out the back was sloppy ball. He wasn't protected, and Dupont managed to get his hand on it, ends up floating the ball to Dan Bigger, and he just gets man and ball, get driven back 15 metres. But a lot of talk on social media, a lot of talk from pundits, commentators on Dan Bigger's general behaviour. Probably the worst I've seen. Very petulant, challenging every single decision. I don't want to see that in the game.
Booting the ball at the retreating French player.
And then throwing his hands up in the air, you know, trying to look for a penalty. You just can't do that. French players are retreating from Dan
running,
Bigger marking
running
the ball.
Backwards as well.
It's not great. And, you know, surely that's going to have an effect on the team when you've got your 10 like that constantly having a go at the ref. You know, that's the captain's job. There is a hierarchy. If you've got issues, you speak to the captain. The captain has a relationship with the ref. And, you know, it's trying to convince the ref that, you know, you're squeaky clean. You're the team that is not doing anything wrong. Whilst, you know, when you've got a guy permanently in a ref's ear like Dan Bigger is, I think it's going to have a negative effect.
See, Alan Wynne-Jones is this legendary leader and legendary player, and he's the greatest Welsh player ever, and if he's not, he's close to it. I just can't believe it's allowed to happen with him there. I mean, he does a fair bit of appealing himself, to be fair, but nothing out of the ordinary, I don't think, these days. I'm really surprised, like, just because I play against a lot and with a few times Martin Johnson, I think to myself, if you did that in his team, it would be made very, very clear that you need to shut up or it'd smack you in the chin. I mean, you just wouldn't be allowed to do that. You absolutely couldn't do it. And I genuinely think it impedes his team's progress in games. I genuinely think it is doesn't just not look good.
It's a poor example, right? You're setting to kids as well about how you respect the referee, how you talk to the referee, because rugby is built on respect. Not many sports are, but rugby is. And it's the way you speak to people. It's the way you act. It's the way you behave. But look, I mean, I know we're talking about Dan Biggar's behaviour during the game. He's a wonderful bloke. He's a great bloke.
Yeah, everyone says that. Everyone says.
Very approachable.
Just the nicest man.
Very professional, but it's just frustration is creeping into his game and he's got to be able to keep a lid on it.
Someone needs to do something about it, I think, because it's not a good look.
I want to speak to you about the Bamba scrum. Now,
man like Bamba?
Well, look, you know, this is the third penalty that Wales have had in the scrum. There's a yellow card. Bamba's come on. If Wales manage to squeeze one more penalty out of that scrum, it's a penalty try. It has to be. What did you make of the scrum? I know Vanya Pivak wasn't too happy with the scrum.
Nor was John Humphreys.
Yeah. Is that just Wales being biased or do you think they've got a valid point?
I got a problem disagreeing with Jonathan Humphreys because he's my rugby hero.
Yeah.
It's a tough one. The question to ask, I think, is had that scrum ball gone in and the Welsh tight head done that to the French team,
yeah,
would Humphreys and Pivac have questioned the angle and conceded that it was an illegal angle? Would they have looked at that and thought, we are lucky to get away with that? Or would they have praised him for his effort in the scrum? I believe the answer to that is the latter. And I think Demba Bamba, very, very strong scrummager at under-20s, gone pro in the big leagues and hasn't been as dominant. Ellis Genge absolutely handed it to him in Paris, tuned him up big style, as he did to Porter when he came on the other day. But Bamba has a point to prove in the scrum.
Yes.
Boy, did he prove it. For me, that is an outstanding scrummage from Demba Bamba.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not completely dead straight, but I'm sorry.
I'm not sorry.
That just isn't the way scrums work most of the time. And I think that were Pivac or Humphreys playing with someone with a tight head that did that, they would love him off. Love him off. Either way, it was immense.
I felt a little bit sorry for Dylan Lewis. He gives a penalty away in France's half, not far from their try line. He scores a try, which is nice, lovely. It's a line by Hadley Parks. He's quite fortunate, actually, because Hadley Parks drops it. The ball goes back, opens up. But he's pinged in the second half, shortly after he's given a penalty away, around the 40-metre mark. He makes a tackle. He's trying to get out of the way. And DuPont ends up knocking the ball forward on his own player's leg. Now, Matt Carley, the referee, sees that, gives a penalty to France. It's no way a penalty. France very lucky with that. And I suppose you look at Romain Entermac, right? Man of the match, cool as a cucumber. That intercept was a gamble. 50-50 gamble, it comes off. But the way he managed his game, his kicking out of hand was absolutely perfect. The up and unders gave all of his team something to chase at. But it's his place kicking that really impressed me. A young bloke, you know, leading the first two games, you know, he was averaging around 68%, 69%, I think. And I know the conditions were really bad in the second game, but he was the Iceman, mate, kicking at goal. Didn't look like missing, was quality all the way through that. But Wales, they had a chance at the end. It was such a thriller that, you know, all the way through that game, it could have gone anywhere and anyone's game. Will Rowlands makes a break.
God, how much better has Will Rowlands got recently? He's always
massive.
Been a good old unit, but geez, he's become some player the last year.
Huge, but Nick Tompkins then has got a bit of open space in front of him, and it was the right decision not to hit Thomas Williams. Thomas Williams on his left, I feel that Thomas Williams is covered, and as soon as he passes that, he's going to get tackled. But Camille Schaap, the turnover at the end. Now, I was speaking to Austin Healy at the event today, and he reckons that was an illegal turnover. Camille Schaap didn't come through the gate, but
he loves an argument, Oz.
He does. He's saying he's got his hands in there first, and he crabs around his legs. Look, I think that was a legal turnover.
You thought it was illegal or a legal turnover?
I thought it was a legal turnover.
Thank you.
There just wasn't the support there. Big player, big moment. and stopped all the Welsh momentum in the game. So
what a piece of defence that was. It was fantastic.
Feel very sorry for George North as well. Takes an elbow from Gael Ficou, who is a centre player on the wing and had a great game.
Like Joseph.
Yeah, like Joseph, but takes a really bad elbow in the start of that first half. And he's concussed on the floor, has to go off. Johnny McNichol comes on. But you've got to start thinking about George North's health. You know, it's not good the amount of times he gets knocked out in HIAs. And they're not huge knockouts either. He got an elbow to the jaw, but a lot don't seem that much force. You know, and I'm talking about previous episodes.
It's when they seem innocuous, you worry a bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's got to start thinking about his health.
I mean, we're not medically qualified, of course. But as a bloke, you worry about him, don't you?
Well, you don't really have to be medically qualified to realise that it's got to be doing some damage to him the amount of times he gets knocked out.
Hope it's not.
Yeah.
Really hope it's not.
But look, fascinating game. I think Wales did enough and probably should have won that when they look at the chances they had. But
yeah,
what resilience,
definitely a penalty try, wasn't it?
What resilience by the French. What attitude. You know, Fabien Galthié, Sean Edwards. It's just working. I'll tell you what also made me laugh is you look at the Welsh team and you look at the Welsh team manager. You've got Martin Williams there now, who's team manager. He's down on pitch side. He's got a desk in front of him. He's filling in cards like he's doing his O-levels, right? It looks like he's doing a test. He's got a tracksuit on. Then you look up to the French team manager and you've got Raphael Ibanez, and he's in a suit. He's got trainers on. He's right next to his man, Galthié, hugging, back slapping. I know what team manager I want to be.
Do you reckon your Nugget needs to get up there and start getting physical with Anya?
He needs to get a suit on, mate.
Get a suit on, Nug. Get it bespoke. Go large. Go to Savile Row. Stick it on WIU expenses.
If you told Nugget to wear a suit and trainers, he'd wear a suit and he'd wear like running trainers.
Yeah. Asics.
Yeah.
Or like Saucony.
Yeah.
Sauconis.
Exactly. High techs.
Great grey Sauconis with laces that are too long. It's so true.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you missed any of the action this weekend, head to the ITV Hub, where you can watch bite-sized highlights of all three matches in the breakdown.
Hastings got the call from his captain, Hogg, to go wide. He throws the pass, and then we see that blistering pace of Stuart Hogg, the captain. Here's the try. There's the skipper. It's taken until round three, but it's a goodie.
ITV's Miles Harrison there on the moment our man Hogmeister General found redemption in Rome, scoring a corking individual try to set Scotland on their way to a 17-0 victory over the Azzurri. Let's hear from the Hogmeister General himself, or Il Porco, as they prefer to call him over there, talking to our Gabriel Clark, the man, the legend, directly after the game.
Stuart, a degree of pressure on Scotland coming into the game, so how do you sum up the win?
No, we're delighted with that. You know, we came across here to do a job and we've done exactly that, and and I'm incredibly proud of the boys. We stuck at it. We've been a huge effort. We came away with the all-important win.
It's not been the easiest first two rounds for you. So sum up that run for the line and the try and the moment for you.
You know, look, we pride ourselves a lot on our attacking play and our defence. And, you know, a huge part of the game now is the kicking game and you know, applying pressure to them. And, you know, we created you know, unstructured defence, which is perfect for the likes of myself and the rest of the back three boys. And, you know, that's what we want. We want to be playing with that kind of defence, and you know, thankfully it just opened up a little bit and managed to score in the corner. But as I say, there's a lot of method in the madness to get ourselves into that situation.
You were absolutely making sure, weren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I've had a lot of chat over the last couple of weeks about that, and I wasn't making a mess of that one, I can assure you.
I knew it was coming, mate. I knew we were going to see the Hogmeister General back in action. What a try that was as well.
It was just beautiful, wasn't it?
I thought Adam Hastings did well. Just feeds Hoggy at the perfect moment. And then what pace.
Slow fullback, though.
Who, Hoggy?
No, Hoggy's not.
Jaden Hayward.
Jaden Hayward skinned him.
There's something about... Look, Jaden Hayward is a fantastic player.
He really is a good
really
player,
really good
yeah.
in attack. Really dangerous. Great
hard,
step on him.
Hard bloke as well.
Yeah, right. But there's something about Italian 15s with not much pace. I look at Luke McLean. I never met the bloke and I feel a little bit bad.
No, go on.
But was not blessed with speed. And I think Jaden Hayward is the same. Hoggy basically went round the outside of him. He probably went about 10 metres laterally, got easily round the outside of him and just had pure pace to finish it off. What a try, though. And I feel so happy for him.
See how hard he gripped the ball when he
dived
in.
Yeah, I know. He did the same for Exeter the week before as well, didn't he, when he scored. Wonderful try.
He's back in the game, mini Hoggers.
He's back.
Hog roast.
I'm never, ever going to doubt him again. I'm never, ever going to jinx him again.
Can't believe he's not in your team of the round.
I'm not even said it yet.
Can't believe he's not in it.
Oh, no, I know, because you made me put Ben Curry at 15. But Hamish Watson
and Tom
was really good.
Yeah, he was. Breakdown was great for Scotland, wasn't it? Italy gave away a load of pens when it really counted, but Scotland dominated on the floor.
Hamish Watson isn't a big bloke. You know, he wouldn't weigh that much, but he's like a pinball. He doesn't run through tackles. He sort of stops, bounces people. You know, you can't use his momentum to tackle him. You know, so I thought he was good. Adam Hastings, bit of a mixed bag, really. Kick out on a full, missed an easy penalty, like his dad.
Oh, in the World Cup. Don't, Tommy.
Not quite as bad as that.
I've never forgiven him, have you?
No penalty or conversion, I can't remember what it was, will be as bad as Gavin Hastings' miss. But he's making a career after speaking about it, so who's laughing now?
Yeah, it's like, oh, I wasn't very, only got a couple of England caps and only scored one try in 10 years for Bath. It's like, oh, poor me. Well, the punters are laughing about it, so it's a win.
But 45 minutes on the clock and only 5-0 to Scotland.
I know.
It took them a bit of time. They didn't look like losing that game. But I suppose the win is far more important than the performance because they needed that. They needed to do something. You know, they should have won the first game against Ireland, tough conditions against England in Hurricane Kira, or Kiara, as you think it's called. So, well done, Scotland, on the win.
Well done, lads.
Let's hope this sort of galvanises you. But, you know, Italy, you've got to be thinking bonus point, unfortunately. They didn't get it, but as I said, the win's more important and they can build on that. I really like seeing Roy Hutchinson come on. Again, I know I keep harping on about him.
I think he made the difference.
Although Chris Harris had a decent game, scored a fairly nice try. And Adam Hastings scored a try right at the end.
My favourite Chris Harris is the one on Top Gear.
Yeah,
I like Chris Harris, the rugby player. Nice fella. But Chris Harris, the Top Gear guy, the car guy, is my guy.
I love it when Freddie Flintoff and who's the other guy with him?
Paddy McGuinness.
They don't bully him, they just abuse him.
Chris Harris put a tweet out and said, for the record, they're not bullying me. We're just having fun. I don't mind. I enjoy it.
They pick on him, shall I say.
Yeah.
But look, Adam Hastings, turnover ball, went down the left-hand side. No defence on the blind side and just ends up cantering in for the third try.
Italy not quite at it when they did create...
Scotland are off the mark.
Did create anything. They are. When Italy did create anything, they didn't quite look like converting it, did they? They're kind of... They're not all there at the moment. They're not all there. Mind you, they haven't been all there for a while. But Scotland have won a game. This is good news. It's good news for everyone, unless you are from Italy.
And it doesn't get any easier for the Italians as they head to Dublin in a fortnight to play the Irish. And the Irish are going to be hurting after the game against England. It's another ITV live and exclusive match, and that will kick off at 2:15 on Saturday.
Right, team of the round time, Tommy. With the format tediously predictable. I'm on the forwards, you're on the backs. I'm just going to go first, all right?
Yeah, go for it.
And don't have a go at me for it. Just,
no.
I get enough abuse online.
I mean, name your team, but if you're close to picking one or two players, just give us a quick reason. Otherwise, we'll fly through it.
Cyril Bye was really good, but went off early. I thought overall, Kean Healy went off quite early as well.
Yeah.
In terms of standout performances, there weren't many from starting loose heads, but the best performance overall, I thought, was Joe Marler, because he just does so little wrong. Very, very solid customer. Was close to picking Genge for what he did when he came on, but I didn't because I picked someone else for what they did when they came on, and I thought it might get me a bad rep.
You listened to nothing what I just explained then?
Yeah, I know, but I'm justifying it a bit.
Okay.
Camille Schat at hooker and Demba Bamba at tight head.
Okay.
Both didn't play very much, but both made enormous impacts when they came off the bench. And I think...
Huge.
I think they... turned/saved a game that France could very easily have lost. I thought they were magnificent. So
valid reason, David.
If I were picking a team to play next week against another all-star team, I would have a front row of Marler, Schat and Bamba.
Do you reckon they go, la, 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 Bamba?
Well, I'd probably have Furlong, actually, but I think Bamba did better this weekend. Okay. Second rows, Alan Wynne-Jones and Valemsa. You're not going to like Valemsa because of the pat-down, but I did think he really put it about. I thought he scored a good try and he did a lot of damage and put some shots in.
Finished his try really well.
I thought he looked really, really good and powerful.
He slapped the ball down.
He did, yeah.
And got away with it.
Everyone in this team has cheated at some point in the last few weeks, okay? By accident or on purpose. That's the way it goes. Blindside flanker, Courtney Laws.
Yes.
Open side flanker, Sam Underhill.
Yes.
Number 8, Aldrit.
Oh.
French lad.
They keep him back all the time, as most number 8s are, but he is just, he's phenomenal at running the ball.
Not a huge guy.
No, runs his weight though.
Runs his socks
and
off.
More.
Runs his socks off, the old brute. Who are the backs?
Okay, 9 are gone DuPont.
Knew you would.
Brilliant. His kicking, his box kicking was amazing, I thought, against Wales. Entomac, obvious reasons,
right.
Man of the match.
Yeah, okay, where's the controversy coming? It must be coming soon.
None really. 12, I struggled a little bit with 12. Robbie Henshaw was decent. Sam Johnson was okay. You know, Vincent, France. But I've gone, and obviously Hadley passed, but I've gone Farrell, I think.
Okay.
I think a big game,
yeah.
Big performance.
Yeah.
Gives England another option at 12. He's always going to play. He's a captain. So I've gone for him at 12.
Could have had George Ford. Had George Ford at 10 if you wanted, but there you are.
No, I've gone Ntamack, mate. Vaca Tower at 13.
Oh, it's no Manu.
Manu was good.
Here we go.
Manu was good. He set the tone. He gave England a go forward. But I thought Vaca Tower, not only is he good in attack, but his defence really shone through. His defence was just as good as his attack. On the wings, I've gone Gael Fiku. Brilliant at the weekend. I've also gone Jonathan Joseph. So there's two centres that have been converted to the wing for this weekend. Both played very well. And at 15, I've gone our mate, Hogmeister.
Oh, the Hogzer. Hogsy, yeah. Hogsy.
Elliot Daly was
Hog
good.
Hog roast.
And so was Boutier. But for me, my 15, Stuarto Hoggo.
Who's captain? It's probably Alan Wynne, isn't it? But actually, should we just make it Hoggy this week because of the try?
Definitely Hoggy.
He's Prime Minister this week.
Good call. There you go. There you go. Our team of the round. We'll put that on Twitter for you to have a look at and, of course, comment. We are at ITV. We're at David Flatman, at Tom Shanklin. Try and be kind to Flats. I know he doesn't deserve it.
You didn't pick Manu.
He needs a bit of confidence, guys, all right?
All right, anyway, before we go, time for a couple more of your gags, inverted commas. We're asking you to leave us a joke on iTunes when you review us. We haven't specifically asked for bad jokes, but you seem to have interpreted our request thus. What you got, Tommy?
I've got my own to start with. So there's two snakes, right? One says to the other, am I poisonous or a restrictor? And the other one goes, I don't know why. He goes, I've just bit my lip. Okay.
Trevor Sorby. Trevor Sorby. A man walks into a library and says, can I have some fish and chips, please? The lady behind the counter says, I'm sorry, sir. This is a library. He says, oh, sorry. Can I have some fish and chips, please? I like that. That's good. That's a good one.
Billy Bye. I used to have issues slicing cheese, but now I have greater problems.
Right. I was in a pub.
Fake laughing.
No, I like that. It's good. Right. I always imagine telling them, because when jokes are completely inoffensive, like Christmas cracker jokes, but I always imagine telling them to my kids would find that funny, because adults don't really find them funny, because we prefer jokes that offend people, like that joke that Jiffy showed us today at Twickenham.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So you're laughing in the thought of telling your kids that.
That's how I think about these, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But the joke Jiffy showed us, and I can't believe it. I mean, that's a career end of that, isn't it?
How's he had a career in the media?
How's he get away with it? This is from Gretz. I was in a pub and three guys were playing poker with a dog. I walked over and said, wow, that's a smart dog to be playing cards. One of the guys looked at me and said, he's not that smart, mate. Every time he gets a good hand, he wags his tail.
It's a sign, his tail. It's like Casino Royale, touching his head, his eye. Condes has said, a ham sandwich walks into a bar and asks for 2 pints of Guinness. The barman says, sorry, we don't serve food in here.
Sam, courtesy of Jimmy Carr, I'm unusually hard for a middle-class man. Al dente, you might say. It's good. That's good.
Mango, what do you call a man wearing brown paper trousers?
Don't know.
Russell. Laughing at telling your kids that one again.
That's good.
Okay.
I like them this week. They're good.
Yeah, well, that's all from us. Do check our chat with Gareth Anscombe in the previous pod if you haven't already. It's another fallow week coming up in the Guinness Six Nations, but don't worry, we will be back.
Yeah, we will at some stage, yeah. We'll have a go, won't we? We'll pull something together.
Yeah, we'll try and get a guest. If not, you'll just hear our lovely tones, won't you?
Might go and do a live show at Shanks' Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gym, something like that.
Is Jiu-Jitsu from Brazil?
Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is, yeah.
What's the difference?
Different accent.
Thought so.
Cheers, Em.
Bye.